Before we begin, everyone do me a favor.
Thanks.
Read a little thing I wrote called the Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Does anybody know what this crypto thing means? Nope. To me, sounds like the new get broke quick scheme. A bunch of fools from across the land investing in something they don't even understand. Bitcoin cash. It's all gonna crash and be gone in a flash. All this unsupported money's an irrational price.
Good evening, everybody. Hold on, everybody. We're having some tech problems. Hang on. Here we go.
There you go. Currency and debase the currency and make the currency weaker. By proxy, my main point is they're making you weaker. Because if your money is a reflection of all your life's work and they're able to make your money worth less, they're able to make you worth less and your life worth less. So the objective is, how can I own something that no one can debase? Effectively, I want to contribute to this world and I don't want anyone to take that value away from me. I don't want anyone to make me worth less. I want to make sure that I can get the same amount of housing and the same amount of clothes and the same amount of education. And if I want to have 10 kids, I can finance my ability to have 10 kids. And to me, that's what Bitcoin solves for. From the highest level possible, Bitcoin's the only monetary unit in the history of our species that is literally fixed. You cannot make more of it.
Welcome to the Tuesday night edition of Tokens Radio Show, our first evening broadcast.
Yes, this is kind of cool.
Yeah. It's Tuesday, February the 4th, and my name's Christy.
I'm Linda.
And I'm Elizabeth.
And we're broadcasting from the studios at KCNR in Redding, California, here on the dial at 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, and online streaming at KCNR1460.com. Follow us on X for updates and commentary at the Tokens Radio Show. And we have Ben in the studio producing tonight, and we're so glad
to have them. Old Ben and New Ben.
Old Ben and New Ben, but New Ben, I think, is older than Old Ben.
But
yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Old Ben is young and, younger.
Oh, feeling a little goofy. Good to have you guys. Thank you so much
for
being here.
They said the only qualification for the new producer was his name was also Ben.
Good qualification. You're hired. And just a shout out to old Ben, who is going to be serving this great country, and we really, really are proud of him.
He was giving us an update, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, so that is very cool. Well, my gosh. What a time to start our show in a new time slot with some big, big stories that have been dominating the crypto headlines. Yeah. The debate over tariffs and a potential strategic crypto reserve. I mean, today Trump signed a strategic wealth fund, starting the work on that with an executive order. Now, here's where things get interesting. You know, there's a heated battle brewing over which cryptocurrency should be included in this reserve. I think here at this table, we think only one should be in that reserve.
I'm looking at you going, what do you mean we got to decide? There's only one.
Battle?
Yeah, there's a battle going on.
So on one side, you've got companies such as Ripple behind major altcoins, which we can't say the real, like, Shiola word. But Shiola coins like XRP, it's a four-letter word starting with S. We can't say that on the radio. But it's like XRP.
Crap, we can say.
But I said started with an S.
Yeah,
okay. But it's like XRP. They're ramping up their lobbying efforts with this company, Ripple, and they're pushing hard to convince lawmakers that alternative cryptos deserve a spot in the reserve.
I don't know. But it's alternative.
Yeah.
And they have things that come with that. That's what bothers me. We were talking, you were saying something before we come on air about centralized and decentralized and all that.
Yeah, which we'll get into in a little bit with them. But, I mean, I think a lot of us, we've wanted to kind of be able to pull something from XRP and just get a bumper sticker or something. But then at the end of the day, it's like, oh, just more marketing.
Yep.
So that's what they're really good at, I think, lobbying and marketing.
So we're going to dive into this controversy in just a moment. But first, let's take a quick look at where the markets stand today and hear a word from our sponsor.
All right. Yep. So currently we have Bitcoin at $98,172. We have the IBIT ETF at $56.13, Ethereum at $2,740, good old XRP at $2.52, and MicroStrategy at $348.31. I'm going to need that one to start going up soon, though, in all honesty.
We won't ask why.
Yeah.
All right. Our friends at the Queen of Dragons, home to Pinnacle Cultivators, sponsors today's show. Their carefully cultivated unique strands offer elevated experiences with exotic genetics and robust flavors. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality control, and knowledgeable staff. Stay connected by following at Queen Dragons on X or calling 530-276-9771.
Yeah, thank you. And let's talk tariffs. That's kind of been a huge headline in the news this week. And we love Dr. Peter Saint-Ange. Yeah. And he kind of released something this week breaking down Trump's proposal to replace income taxes with tariffs, which is a pretty bold move that could give American families an extra $2,500 a month, which I think that's a lot right now in this environment. But what about inflation? What could that – how does that kind of
– work in there?
Really, yeah. So let's just hear what Peter has to say about that.
Donald Trump is doubling down on completely repealing the income tax, replacing it with tariffs on foreigners. The left, who uses the income tax to suck the blood from the American people on behalf of giant corporations – and pink-haired child mutilators are popping their little heads. Now, during the campaign, Trump had repeatedly mused, what if we just get rid of the income tax and abolish the IRS? The left was not taking him seriously because, like, politicians say all kinds of stuff when they're trying to get elected. But now, with the election safely under his belt, Trump is not letting it go. In fact, he's doubling down. In an address to a major GOP policy retreat in Florida, Trump ran through the history of the tariff, how America was much richer as a country when we funded the federal government not off the blood, sweat, and tears of the American people, but off foreigners in the form of tariffs. Of course, that golden age ended in 1913 with the left's victorious imposition of an income tax that was originally promised as only hitting the top 1%, but today, of course, hits everybody. Now, I've talked about the tariffs for income tax trade-off, but in short, if you get rid of the income tax and replace it with tariffs, you're looking at a $1.5 trillion net decline in federal taxes, so you would need Elon's Doge to cut spending. In return, you would massively raise income, raise economic growth, and lower inflation. I've estimated the average American household would see something like a $30,000 rise in annual income. That's about 40%, and it comes to about $2,500 per month. About half of that would come from the taxes you no longer pay, the other half from higher economic growth, since we would no longer be taxing work or entrepreneurship. The higher growth would be what's lowering inflation, since inflation is money chasing goods. More goods, a bigger economy, means lower prices. That would easily offset whatever tariffs do to prices. Moreover, and Trump's highlighted this, an America without an income tax would be easily the most attractive country to produce on earth. Especially paired with tariffs and regulatory cuts, which Trump is also pushing, literally every country on earth would start trying to move production to America. China would be the one crying about rust belts. I was giddy about a presidential candidate merely talking about ending the income tax. Now we've got a sitting president who actually wants it. Hard to overstate just how massive this is. Having said, can it happen? With Republicans controlling all three branches, absolutely. Legislatively, you just repeal the Revenue Act of 1913, stroke of a pen, the IRS is gone forever. And thanks to something called reconciliation, any bill that primarily affects revenue, which this is by definition, only needs simple majority in Congress to pass for 10 years. At which point I suspect the American people will not want an income tax they have not been paying for 10 years. In short, after generations of promising to battle for smaller government, the GOP finally has the chance to make all their promises come true, Trump wants it. The American people want it. Gallup says Americans think their taxes are too high by 15 to 1. The last barrier is Republicans in Congress who, in theory, serve you.
I think definitely it can happen with the stroke of the pen. I mean,
wouldn't that be something?
Let's see. Trump's been stroking an awful lot of executive orders lately.
A lot of pen writing going on there. But when you stop and think about it, we would operate just fine without an income tax, because what don't you pay tax on right now?
Well, pay tax on everything.
Yeah.
Right. So all we would have is sales tax. And that would be fine. I don't mind paying sales tax.
We have sales tax.
I don't want income tax, though.
We have gas taxes.
Sure.
We have, a lot of different taxes that we pay.
Right. The property taxes is what gets me. That's something that shouldn't have an inflationary factor on there. That's not all right, in my view.
I don't think we should have property tax at
all. I don't either. I mean, but... and again, this is just a paradigm. I think you're raising a good point, because... Why should we have property taxes, right? If we can get rid of the income tax, we should be able to get rid of the property tax, because presumably there was no property tax at that time.
Well, not just that, but it's ours.
Well, it
is
ours.
It's our property.
Right.
I mean,
I think for me, a lot of it comes back to just, like, budget accountability. With all of this, like the tariffs, not having tax, like, okay, what is the budget? How do we agree on? And then not just pass things like randomly. And then, you know, we get into like the crazy money printing to need to fund, things that like giving, you know, foreign aid or different things like that. So I'm thinking, you know, why don't we just like stick to sales tax and come up with only being able to spend what that covers.
You mean within the budget?
It works in other states that don't have state income tax.
Right, yeah. I guess what I'm describing is just having the federal government do what the states are pretty much accountable
it's
for
kind
doing.
Of a, it's a pay-as-you-go. It's
not
like
novel
Bitcoin,
idea.
Right? Yeah. You do a Bitcoin transaction, you pay your transaction fee, and the person on the other end pays a transaction fee, and everybody's happy.
But in even income tax and everything that you have, it doesn't even cover.
It doesn't.
So this is like all an illusion.
Exactly. And you know, we have history that shows that this works. I mean, for 70 years. Prior to 1913, I mean, we were doing just fine on tariffs. I mean, there's quite a bit of history here about that.
And you brought up 1913. Not only did they introduce the income tax at that time, but it was only supposed to be temporary.
Yeah.
For one.
Don't ever believe the temporary word
when it comes to the government.
That's right.
Yeah, you know. And here we still have it.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be voluntary. Well, let me know how that works for you if you don't file your income taxes right now. So,
Anthony Pompliano wrote a great article about this, and we've got a couple things we're referencing here. And Trump experimented with this in his first administration, particularly with solar panels. And then he put an original tariff of 30% on foreign solar panels and modules that were imported here in the United States, and the tariff decreased by 5% each year until it bottomed out at 15%. But what happened to solar panels? Oh, we were getting them much cheaper. They should have gone up in price, right? If you're hearing everything, we're believing the narrative we're hearing now, but the exact opposite happened. Domestic solar panel prices continue to fall in prices they had been for years before the tariffs. And they also were being manufactured domestically here. So
that's one example. They are now.
No, a lot of them went back out. Another one is washing machines. Same deal. Steel. The steel discussion is something that Trump has brought up so many times, where he claims that he saved the steel industry by putting on a tariff, helping the farmers.
What it would do for our country, for manufacturing or farming or just producing across the board. We have everything in this country to carry out almost everything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, will tariffs raise prices or whatever. You know, it's anytime you have a disruption in the marketplace, you have market makers who are making adjustments, and that causes price fluctuations. But the market straightens itself out, and it's just like what happened with the supply chain. Remember that not too long ago, what happened?
With the shipping?
Just terrible. And then eventually it got straightened out, and here we are, pretty much a normal supply chain. You could pretty much find whatever you want, except for eggs right now, but that's a whole other different story.
But to the shipping, remember, it wasn't that they weren't there. Remember, we went to
L.A.,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And they were all out in the ocean. There was
That was a couple years ago.
Yeah, there was a lot of ships out there. They couldn't get to the dock to unload. It wasn't that they didn't have the merchandise.
Yeah, I agree with you, Chrissy. I think it can make some higher prices, but then it could bring a lot of business back. And I think just when you're such in a hole, sometimes there is pain to get out. And that's just the reality. And I think sometimes us as Americans, sometimes myself included, we have a low pain threshold. We want to do things that's going to set just the course of this country on the right path for our grandchildren and the next generation.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, with the tariffs that were just scheduled to start on the 1st of February, Mexico capitulated very quickly, but they were able to return something of value.
Yeah.
Like 10,000 troops. That was great. And same thing with Canada. So it works. So even just the threat of tariffs. So we're not going to be spending our money on that manpower to take care of the borders and crack down on the fentanyl.
Well, like you and I were talking, all of us, before we come out on that, it's a bargaining chip,
right?
Too.
Yeah, it's more like that. They know what they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like it's just boom, cut and dry, and that's it. You know what I mean? There's a lot of opportunity for both sides of this equation, and they can be good for both sides.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, this administration, they want to remove trade barriers and create wealth just for us and a more prosperous world. I mean, some people can disagree with me, but yeah, I think it's also just the basics of economics. You want just to make sure that just the two parties can trade and there's not much in the way to stop it. But also, if those parties are bringing in a lot of harmful drugs that are killing our population, we don't want just money.
We don't want safety, security. Funneling to certain politicians who are lining their pockets and turning their head another way, but
and get rich.
Yeah. So can we put tariffs to bed right now?
I think so.
Okay.
But it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I do have one more joke I really want to share. When you were saying that the income tax was supposed to be temporary, this is a quote from Ronald Reagan, and he said, "Government programs, once launched, never disappear. Actually, a government bureau is the nearest thing to eternal life we'll ever see on planet Earth."
That is so true.
Now you can put it to bed.
Yeah.
Isn't he the one that said the seven worst words in the English language is
the government.
I'm here from the government.
And I'm here to help.
I never heard that one.
Well, let's go and move over to the strategic crypto reserve debate.
Yes.
And we have a clip here from Swan CEO Corey Clipston, and he draws an interesting parallel between crypto trading and sports betting. This is just golden. And he argues many traders chase quick riches and risky bets, while steady Bitcoin investment has proven more reliable over time. So why don't we go ahead and give this a listen? It's about 2.5 minutes.
It's the last battle. Bitcoin has been separated from crypto in the minds of the market, the media, and most investors. Investors that actually have money, they see Bitcoin as like saving and investing, and then crypto is gambling. Just paying attention to like the media landscape, I've had enough bandwidth the last couple of years after startup mode to start paying attention to basketball again, which is awesome. All of the advertisement is either crypto or sports gambling. And it's only those two things. And interestingly, I now have a whole different view of like sports media because I work in Bitcoin and observe this other thing called crypto and how they do things. And now I realize that almost all of sports is fueled by gambling. almost exclusively. Like all the media content is not about, you know, what's this interesting in-depth interview about this athlete as a person. No, it's like the injury report so that somebody can change their fantasy football lineup or, you know, change the third leg in their seven leg parlay. And it's basically, it's all kind of just a regressive tax on people that are gambling to try to get 10x or 100x ahead on what they're gambling instead of putting a little bit away and saving for the long term. And that's what really is at play. It's basically saving versus gambling is Bitcoin versus crypto and sports gambling in Vegas and Macau and all of these things that go back millennia. This is not new. We saw people like playing dice in Rome, you know, playing, you know, little gambling games and stuff. And it's just the education of the lower and middle classes that you have a way now to get ahead by just saving a little bit, whatever you can, and putting that into Bitcoin. I mean, we've seen that more and more people see it that way and that it's working out for them because there was just a massive pleb class that came in like 17, 18, and it's changed their lives since then just by stacking daily or weekly since 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. It's a big, big boost and helping them get their parents retired and buying cottages or whatever it is, you know, like it's changing things for people further down the economic ladder, which is beautiful. So I just hope more and more people realize that there is a way to save now that doesn't require being a hedge fund manager and that doesn't require permission to access. That's the main thing. Like anybody can do it. And that's never existed before.
There's so much packed into that.
Yeah, there is.
A couple quick takeaways, you know, before we go to break here was Bitcoin versus crypto is like a Bitcoin savings versus crypto, which is gambling.
I like that. Like
yeah,
gambling. I wrote down, you know, like a slot machine. Just pull the handle and see what lands.
You
should
have seen Linda here. She was doing, come on, baby. Like she was throwing craps. Yeah.
I feel like the best phrase is just the crypto casino.
Yep.
That one's always
right.
Stuck with me. Yep. And there are thousands of machines.
Yeah.
Stack and hold, baby.
And then they're stacking and holding.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is save a little bit. So with that,
and anybody can do it.
That's averaging. Right.
Anybody can do it. With that, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Tokens Radio Show here on 1460 AM and 96.5 FM. We will see you in a few minutes.
He's the king of the comeback, the star of the show. With a wave and a wink, he's ready to go. Love him or hate him, you can't look away. 'Cause here comes Donald, saving the day. Here comes Donald, and he's taking the wheel. Turning up the energy, keeping it real. From the heart of the nation to the world stage. Here comes Donald, he's center page.
Happy New Year, Redding, from your friends at Black Bear Diner, reminding you that if you're looking for more food, more fun, and more family, this is the place to be. You can count on a warm atmosphere and deliciously fresh home-style food. It's the perfect spot for every generation, with something for everyone. Come for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive, Redding.
Black Bear Diner.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Attention hunters, Blackburn Apparel is your local manufacturer of top quality, unique outdoor wear. Hikers, fishermen, or hunters, Blackburn Apparel will have you looking and feeling fantastic. And they have a shop right here in Reading on Crossroads Drive. Blackburn Apparel carries clothing for every outdoorsman, and they also offer a uniquely designed line of accessories and gear. Check it out at ShopBlackburn.com. Then come buy your selection in the showroom and save on shipping. Blackburn Apparel. Shop Blackburn.com or visit the shop at 3058 Crossroads Drive.
Good day. Welcome to this week's Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, and I'm here with the latest local updates. On Tuesday, the Shasta County Board of Supervisors discussed multiple agenda items, including concerns about air quality and potential geoengineering. Board Chair Kevin Cry invited Geoengineering Watch to present after noting changes in local air quality and citing recent childhood cancer cases. The organization suggested government agencies are concealing information about atmospheric spraying. The board also made two significant administrative decisions. They appointed Ted Liddy, a veteran and firearms instructor, to the Shasta Mosquito and Vector Control Board of Trustees, replacing environmental scientist Philip Kramer. Additionally, they modified the Elections Commission structure, limiting annual meetings to 10 during election years and 4 in non-election years, while expanding commission membership. The meeting drew diverse public comments, with participants expressing varying views on both the geoengineering discussion and broader county priorities like mental health and public safety. While the county government grappled with these administrative changes, another local institution faced challenges. Oak Run Elementary School District in California faces a financial crisis after over-reporting average daily attendance, ADA, data between 2021 to 2023. The district must repay approximately $825,000 to the state, nearly matching its annual budget of $775,000. The discrepancy arose from claiming attendance for students without proper immunization records or independent study documentation. The district terminated Superintendent Misty Livingston and appointed Mark Tellis as interim superintendent. A June 2024 report by the Shasta County Office of Education's Fiscal Crisis and Management Assistant Team indicated the district was at high risk of insolvency, citing issues including deficit spending and insufficient business oversight. The district has appealed for an 8-year repayment plan of approximately $103,000 annually. Leadership continues working to address both financial and operational challenges while maintaining student services. As educational authorities work to resolve the Oak Run crisis, another story of financial misconduct emerged in the county. A Reading property manager, Kylie Carreras, pleaded guilty to felony embezzlement in Shasta County after misappropriating over $66,000 from approximately 30 local Airbnb property owners. The case emerged when property owners, including realtors Cindy Young and Todd James, discovered financial discrepancies in their accounts. Young and James, who initially hired Carreras through a colleague's recommendation, lost approximately $15,000 in the scheme. Affected property owners recovered their losses through collaboration with the district attorney's office. The resolution includes a plea deal requiring Carreras to serve federal probation and repay the remaining $20,000 in restitution. A follow-up court appearance is scheduled for June. The case highlights the importance of thorough background checks when hiring property managers. In contrast to these challenging situations, some positive developments were taking place in the county's natural attractions. Following a 9-month renovation project costing $850,000, Burney Falls trails have reopened to the public. The California Landmarks paths were closed in April 2024 to address erosion caused by increased foot traffic, particularly after the site gained popularity on social media platforms in 2023. The reopening includes the Falls Loop Trail and Burney Creek Trail, restoring full viewing access to the waterfall. The main trail to the falls is a brief 0.3-mile walk, making it accessible to visitors of varying hiking abilities, though caution is advised due to slippery conditions. The site's visitor center operates Wednesday through Sunday with a $10 parking fee. Current visitors should note ongoing construction along Highway 89 near the falls. Before we go, looking for more local stories? We've got you covered. Find additional news and updates on our social media. Join the conversation at Shaslate Town Hall on Facebook or at Town Hall News on X. From all of us at Town Hall Brief, thanks for listening.
And we're back. Hey, that got everybody going.
Yeah.
I love it.
That was good.
I love it. And that's going way back.
Yeah.
Way back. Showdown. All
good,
right.
Good grooving music.
Yeah. Elizabeth's like, really?
No, that had me going. I like
I
it.
I know, but. Yeah. All right. This segment is sponsored by the Anderson VFW Post. Since 1899, the Veterans of Foreign Wars has been fighting for veterans' rights. From creating the VA to securing benefits for today's service members. If you're planning an event, the Anderson VFW Post would love to host for you. Give them a call at 530-365-9650. They will take good care of you. They are awesome down there, and they're reasonable, and it helps support people in the military, past and present.
Yeah, supports our community.
It does. Yeah. They're awesome.
Yeah. And I think this last year, there's been such a major shift in the crypto world, as we know, and we see Bitcoin is breaking away from other cryptocurrencies, kind of, you know, really standing out. And recently we see Ripple now pushing to be included in the U.S. Strategic Reserve. They'd love for XRP to be a part of that. And we have Hurley examining just the controversy about this and their history. His analysis points to issues of fraud and centralized control, arguing why Bitcoin stands alone as a legitimate digital asset. So he had a really interesting take. So let's take a listen.
All right.
Bitcoin has slowly been decoupling from the broader crypto industry over the last several years. But this decoupling has more recently accelerated, and that's caused many traders to begin to wonder if there will even be a quote-unquote altcoin season this cycle at all. The slow bleed of other crypto projects priced in Bitcoin has been well documented over the years, but many crypto traders saw this as normal market dynamics, as historically Bitcoin runs first, and then cools, and then alt season takes off. So many traders historically have tried to time the beginning of alt season by moving out of Bitcoin and into a basket of crypto altcoins to try to capture the upside before cycling profits back into Bitcoin. In theory, this sounds genius. You capture outsized gains in crypto pumps and then end up with more Bitcoin in the end. But in reality, this is rarely how it works out. Most traders will spend countless hours trading in and out of crypto projects, eyes peeled to charts, trying to stay on top of the latest trends, and attempting to time the market, when 99.9999% of the time, they would have been better off just chilling and stacking Bitcoin. This reality is really starting to become clear, as this cycle might be the first one since the original 2017 ICO boom where Bitcoin dominates the entire cycle and there is no alt season. There has never been a more clear delineation between Bitcoin and all other crypto coins. Serious investors with huge capital, and now even nation states, understand that Bitcoin is a legitimate asset without an issuer. And everything else is either gambling meme coins or deceptive marketing. So the vast majority of the hundreds of thousands of crypto coins out there are unapologetically gambling memes. And not unlike sports gambling, they're a symptom of people being desperate and left behind by our broken monetary system. But there are other crypto projects that are a lot more sinister. Take XRP, for example. XRP is currently the third largest crypto project by market cap next to Ethereum. Started in 2012 by Ripple Labs with a 100 billion token pre-mine, where a staggering 50% of all XRP tokens were initially printed and held by Ripple. As the crypto market began to heat up in 2017, Ripple started to aggressively promote XRP as a solution to cross-border payments using funds acquired by dumping billions of XRP tokens on early retail investors. Since then, Ripple and founders Brad Garlinghouse and Chris Larson have been sued by the SEC for selling unregistered securities. They've cozied up to banks in an attempt to be the underpinning network for central bank digital currencies, which focus on increasing government control over our money. CBDCs, if you don't already know, are the exact antithesis of Bitcoin. They take the government-controlled money we already have today and add even tighter restrictions and power through programmability and censorship. Ripple's war against Bitcoin became blatantly clear in 2022 when Chris Larson, Ripple's co-founder, funded Greenpeace with $5 million to launch an anti-Bitcoin campaign named Change the Code, Not the Climate. The blatant misleading campaign was an utter failure and just shined more light on the nuanced and positive reality of Bitcoin's impact on energy markets and the climate. Fast forward to 2025, and Ripple's latest scandal involves aggressive lobbying to undermine the proposed strategic Bitcoin reserve in the U.S. Prior to the Trump victory, Ripple, again through co-founder Chris Larson, spent millions to attempt to influence politicians to push for CBDCs that could benefit their own technology stack. Now that the Trump administration has taken office and announced a crypto stockpile, as well as an all-out banning of the creation of CBDCs in the U.S., Ripple has pivoted to lobbying to have XRP added into the national crypto stockpile. The simple fact that Ripple can print their own XRP and controls the underlying protocol is the fundamental reason why XRP has little to no chance of ever being part of a national crypto stockpile. Bitcoin is the only cryptocurrency that gets to the core of the issue and fixes our money from the foundation. Everything else is a symptom of our broken money. And as Bitcoin's increasing dominance makes clear, the age of crypto scams is inevitably coming to an end. So if you hold some XRP or Ethereum or any other basket of cryptos and are expecting the next big alt season to begin, you might just be left on the sidelines as Bitcoin fully decouples and leaves everything else in the dust.
And here's Strike CEO Jack Mahler's perspective on the strategic, strategic reserve debate.
I think that a Bitcoin strategic reserve, so firstly, this concept, this idea that's been floated around, and it seems like we're making political progress, I think it would be one of the most important economic announcements in U.S. history. Important meaning, I think, on par with something like Nixon's announcement in 1971. However, I think the big difference that no one's talking about enough is it would be one of the first positive economic announcements. So important doesn't bias positive or negative. It means it's meaningful to the public. But meaningful to the public has usually been negative with economic U.S. announcements. 1933 was a really big one, and it was the confiscation of gold. 1971, Nixon, the one I keep referencing, was a really big one. It was divorcing ourselves from the gold standard, which the way I like to think about it is divorcing our monetary policy from the immutable laws of Mother Nature. And the ability for the government to print currency, debase currency, and inflate the goods and services of the people and the public. And then 2008 was another very important, I would say, economic announcement and string of decisions from financial authorities. But was it positive? No. It was that financial authorities took the side of Wall Street, banks, and private corporations and burdened the cost of the mistakes on the people, on the public. And I think a Bitcoin strategic reserve would be as important in the caliber of those type of financial announcements, but positive. And I think there's a lot of insights in that idea because this is an asset that's owned only 2-4% of the Bitcoin network is owned by governments. This is an asset where its monetary policy cannot be changed. It cannot be forced seizure. It's global. It's inclusive. You could buy a penny worth of Bitcoin. So you're talking about a financial instrument that can measure a grain of sand or a professional sports team, right? And so this is in the best interest of the people. It's in the best interest of the public. And we're reaching an inflection point where is the future of the money one of the people or one of corporations? And so I think it's as important but positive. And when I see something like Ripple lobbying privately as a for-profit corporation – to undermine this idea of a positive announcement that's in the best interest of the people, in the best interest of the public, that's changing the tide of the last century of American economic announcements and monetary policy against the public, against the people, and really changing the momentum in our direction as a country and the leader of the free world. Ripple is bringing us back to all of the awful announcements that are against the best interest of the public that I just walked us through, right? This is private lobbying acting as innovation, acting as a public good and service. But what is it? Ripple printed 100 billion XRP tokens, gave it to themselves, and the distribution to the people is by them selling it. You know, people say, well, Michael Saylor's lobbying for Bitcoin. Why can't Ripple lobby for Ripple? Well, Michael Saylor has bought $30 billion worth of Bitcoin. He thinks Bitcoin's a good idea for him. And he wants America to think the same. Ripple has never bought Ripple. They've only sold it. If XRP is so good, why don't you buy any? Why do you keep selling it? So this is a private corporation that's created money out of thin air, that biases themselves, that wants to burden the American public to promote their self-interest. It's the same as 1933. It's the same as 1971. It's the same as 2008, hidden as a public good that's riding the coattails of Bitcoin. So my announcement was trying to give that context, give the American history of that the people and the public have been the burden and the brunt of all of the unfortunate mistakes when it comes to monetary policy and economics in this country. And this is our opportunity through technological innovation, where Bitcoin's a public utility for us. And there's corporate lobbying that's trying to take that away and prioritize their interests. So
there was so much said there.
Yeah.
And that's why we wanted to play that cut, because I think he had a couple of important points of teeing this up with poor decisions made in our country, such as 1971 and then in 2008. That was all negative. Also, we have a private company who has virtually made a cryptocurrency, kind of like how our Federal Reserve just manufactures our dollars, and you could just print them at will. And this company is not investing in themselves. They're selling it to the public. They probably own a lot of Bitcoin, but they're not buying their own tokens.
No, they're just selling it to everybody.
And I think 60% of XRP are just controlled by private or for-profit companies.
Right. Yeah. So I think, you know, and just out of fairness, I mean, we have invested in XRP, and just because it was a gambling move. All right, we all understand that, okay, and look an opportunity to make a little extra money, but it is definitely not the piggy bank. It is not the long-term savings play. And so I do agree that this does not belong in the strategic reserve, because I think that that would taint the reserve with impure assets. You would expect in the reserve there might be oil. Well, there would be gold, hard metals.
Right. Yes. I don't see how you can put it in there.
Well, they're going to certainly try. That's why they're lobbying so much.
But for the value and stuff, I don't see how you can place it there.
Sovereign wealth funds now.
That's a start. Yeah. That's the savings account so they can buy the Bitcoin. Yes, and that's going to come from tariffs and all of that. So, yeah, anyway.
It's very interesting because this becomes a topic and a discussion all the time about other cryptocurrencies.
Right.
In the crypto world, whether you're a Bitcoiner or not, it's always, you know, a conversation that we have with people and have to discuss it.
I think that we're at this point right now where many of the cryptos are just going to go off and vanish off. And you're going to have a couple that are left remaining. We've talked about this before, but I think it's just much more evident now.
Yeah, I think there will still be people just birthing meme coins still and all that. Like,
I think
there will be
Kitten coins
and
stuff
know
like that.
Kind of what we're saying. Right. This whole show is like there is a big distinguishing amongst them. But, yeah, I think there's a big amount of people that just enjoy the crypto casino just as they enjoy any casino.
But any gambling game.
Yeah. We're not going to see casinos go away.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Well, Jack had much more to say, and we have another clip here where he talks about how some players use market arbitrage in altcoins, Shiola coins, a practice he says exploits uninformed investors. And I know you'll all get this once you hear this. So here we go.
Let it go.
I've always considered altcoins, so every crypto that isn't Bitcoin, I've called it an arbitrage on the trend. An arbitrage trade, let's take this glass of water I have here, for example. If I can buy a bottle of water on the north side of town for $1, and I can sell that bottle of water on the south side of town for $10, in finance and in trading, we call that an arbitrage, where I'm taking advantage of the inefficiency in a market and arbing the spread. I'm making $9 a trade. So what am I going to do? I'm going to spend all day buying $1 water bottles north and traveling down south and selling them for 10. Eventually, what happens is the market gets efficient and the north water bottle will find itself at $5 because all the demand of me buying it at $1 will push the price up, and all the sell pressure at $10 will bring these two to an equilibrium of about 5, and then the market will be efficient, and I've monetized the inefficiency. Now, what do I mean arbitrage on the trend of altcoins? Well, here you have a new technological trend in Bitcoin. New technology, new innovation, a computer science problem, and the Byzantine generals problem is fundamentally solved, which was previously inconceivably impossible. So Satoshi had a breakthrough. Now, what's the arbitrage opportunity? I think it's been both regulatory and informational. One is traditionally you're not allowed to just make money in your basement and pay Justin Bieber to sell it to a bunch of 18-year-olds. That's previously immoral, unethical, and therefore illegal in the United States of America. But we hadn't
totally figured out the regulatory environment for this new technology. So it almost allowed you to be your own central bank, where previously that was both obviously immoral, unethical, and not very principled, but also would put you in prison. Also, there's an informational arbitrage where I don't totally understand Bitcoin. What's the difference between Bitcoin and Jetcoin and Natalie Coin and Woodcoin and Pinkcoin? So what's the arbitrage opportunity? What's the $1 water bottle you can buy and the 10 you can sell? Well, I can create my own coin and I can lobby politicians and I can pay influencers and I can pay bot armies to convince the confused, the uneducated, and take advantage of a regulatory environment that isn't as mature. And so the way I've been in Bitcoin for 12 years, creating an altcoin and selling an altcoin to the uneducated was a lot easier when I got involved in early 2013, late 2012. It's a lot harder today. You got to have a lot of money, a lot of lobbying, a lot of power because the market's getting more efficient. I would say if I were carrying my analogy, initially the water bottle was $1 and you're selling it for 10, it was really easy to make money there. I would say the market's closing a little bit. And I think whether it's 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, eventually the market will be plenty educated and there'll be proper regulations where this opportunity isn't so easy to make money. But what I see with all of these coins, Trump coin, whatever, is it's an arbitrage trade, right? They're taking advantage of inefficiencies in the market as people aren't educated and regulators aren't up to speed on how to prevent ethical, immoral behavior in robbing the American public.
Yeah, there's a lot said there. Oh my goodness. And I do see that happening in the market. Do you see the constant theme here? It's Ripple.
Ripple, ripple, ripple,
ripple. Ripple is getting ripped.
In a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then finally, we have just one more clip from Jack, and he's getting a little personal about just the significance of Bitcoin for him and his life, sharing his hopes for his children's financial future and why he sees Bitcoin
as his children.
Yeah. Historic innovation. Yeah.
Here we go.
So here's Jack.
If something like Ripple is able to successfully lobby, then I lose a lot of confidence in the future I want my kids to have. So I see this as a very unique opportunity. I don't think there's going to be many Bitcoins invented in our lifetime. Usually there's one technological innovation that drives, you know, future generations that we all rally behind and build foundations on. I think the story of humanity is engineering a better world in many ways. And to me, that is Bitcoin. So that, to me, that's like the big narrative. And a lot of my voice here is like, this is more important than benefiting a private company here. I get lobbying. I get that. But this is an inflection point for our country. And, you know, I plan on being a dad someday. And I don't want my kids to have, you know, my version of 2008 or 1971 or 1933. I think we can make change here uniquely. And, you know, don't want to screw up these types of opportunities.
You know, for such a young man, mm-hmm. he has such insight. I don't think it was on any of these clips that we played, but he had mentioned, he goes, I'm barely a millennial. He goes, most people consider me Gen Z. And he sounds young. And he goes, I could care less about politics. Mm-hmm. And then he says, you know, I'm a coder. He goes, I write programs. And he goes, and that's what my generation's all about. We fix problems with code. And they're just not interested in all of the political games that are going on. And I think the way that he has explained this problem that we're looking at right now, should Ripple be part of the strategic reserve or any of the other cryptos be part of the strategic reserve or not? My vote is that they should not. There might be, there shouldn't even be a need for a stablecoin in there at all. But although they want to do something with stablecoins now mm-hmm. as part of the payment system.
Yeah. Yep, I would probably align more with that. But I think something that, I saw this on Twitter and it kind of rubbed me the wrong way, but it's true. And it was like, this administration is just, they're not just like, you know, Trump's not just a Bitcoin president. He's more a crypto president, mm-hmm. right? And he, I think, is open to a lot of other things.
Sure.
And, you know, so I think they will kind of maybe go that route. I could see a stable coin or two in there. So it would be my pick, but yeah, we'll
right.
see how it kind of like plays out. So after seeing that, I was like, okay, I could see that.
But where's Don Jr. on this?
Oh, where's Barron?
And what
is like WBTC? Did you guys see about
that? Oh, that's
that?
Bitcoin.
Yeah,
can run on the Ethereum or Ethereum or Solana.
Yeah. So.
Just a thought, you know, because I know Don Jr. and good point, Baron. I mean, we know that they're in the crypto world.
Oh, yeah. Well, in case you didn't listen to the differences here, and there are definitely differences between a Shiola coin that is not done on proof of work and Bitcoin, which is completely proof of work. So let's just talk about some of the differences. XRP, for instance, is pre-mined and has an insider allocation. So the project's founders and their virtual capitalists gave themselves massive percentage of the supply. They just, poof, made it, and they have a supply.
And they keep making it whenever they want, correct?
Well, there's supposed to be a set supply.
Supposed to be, but...
Right now, but who's to say that that can't change, right?
Right.
And then they put this percentage of the supply before the public so that they can buy it, right? And there's little distinction about what was pre-mined and the crime of printing money. I mean, really? But, okay. Same thing happened with Ethereum, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you got the marketing and the hype. They use influencers, fake partnerships, fake news, social media accounts to pump
the price.
Sounds
like something else we've heard before.
And then they do a retail dump. The insiders cash out and leave you holding the bag. You bought XRP for $10, and now it's at $250, right?
Yeah, and a lot of the altcoins kind of follow this playbook.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
The playbook.
I know somebody that lost a lot of money with XRP and playing the game.
Sure.
And the gamble.
And then we've got Bitcoin, which is a fixed supply, only 21 million. No more can be done. It's decentralized. It's proof of work. It's secured. It's unchangeable. And they had a fair launch. There was no pre-mine.
Well,
so it's a huge difference.
XRP.
Yeah,
it's not like with Bitcoin, you know, 10 years from now or whatever, somebody's going to go, oh, well, we decided we're going to put, you know, mine some more, or we're going to make some more or whatever. There's no way.
Yeah.
Can't change that.
So that makes me uncomfortable about XRP. And, you know, and it wasn't just too long ago that there was a campaign out there to just really take a Bitcoin down.
And
all right.
Who was that funded by?
Ripple. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And same marketing people, but now we can all coexist now. Because they see something, a profit incentive in there.
I bet they can.
I vote it should not be part of the strategic reserve, but I'm afraid that it may be at some point. So,
well, the thing is, can you unplug it once it's plugged in?
You know what I mean? I imagine they can, sure.
That's what I wonder then, if they would have to give, like, the government some control or
right.
What?
And
then
it's
just a whole other fiat recreated. But otherwise, because then they could just manipulate everything behind the scene. I don't know. There's, a lot of ethical concerns.
Yeah.
So, big question. How much could 1.1 Bitcoin be worth? I don't know. What do you think about that?
Could be worth.
I would you like to hear?
Yeah, I would.
Okay, it's about 30 seconds.
The suspense is killing me.
Here we go.
Bitcoin over the last 5 years has returned 55% CAGR. If you get a tenth of a Bitcoin right now, just sit on a tenth of a Bitcoin over, and you know, your audience, I'm sure, is not old farts like me. You're probably younger. Well, guess what? You go 20 years, that's $64 million. That's enough. It's plenty. In today's purchasing power. Now, I don't know what it's going to be then, $200 million, who knows? Could be buying a cup of coffee. But in today's dollars, in purchasing power, that tenth of a Bitcoin is $64 million. Just let it sit there.
Yeah, just let it sit there.
And the answer to your question is 64.
I can't wrap my head around it.
Isn't it amazing?
Well, my heart's wrapped around
one tenth of a Bitcoin. So what's the message here, folks? I mean, it's not too late to get in,
no,
is it?
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's important.
At any amount.
Yeah.
That's what's important too. And it doesn't matter who you are, what you do. You're never too late right now.
Actually, and if you're listening, amount, this is your sign to get some Bitcoin. Just a few dollars worth. A big misconception people often have is that they have to purchase a whole Bitcoin. But no, you can even buy $5 worth.
Yeah.
Well, at 64 million, it wouldn't take much.
And what's an easy way to go? There's a couple of companies out there that you can do this through Strike, which is Jack Mahler's company. You can use River. Swan. You can use River. And Swan and River in particular, you could set it and forget it. I think you could do something similar like that with Strike, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And with that, we're coming to the end of the show.
Yeah.
I want to thank Elizabeth for coming in. It's always good conversation and good time.
So fun.
I hope you come back soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And with that, we'll see you next week.
Good night.
When he wrote about the way things are and the way things ought to be.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.